There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 1049, June 24th, 2024, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say Max in Barcelona. First cut is the deepest, and get your kicks on lap 66. McLaren on fire, on and off track. Man gone in disgrace is back to save face. And we have a serious F1 insider in the palatial studios. We shall explain gladly. Back to you, sir.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Max knows the McLaren is faster. Lando knows this too. Piastri hanging with Perez. And Ferrari still lost in the Canadian mist. Flavio is back in town. And Fernando says, "Less talk and more performance, por favor." And this week's interview, F1 journalist Michael Schmidt extraordinaire. And our bonus today is another episode from Loosh on the Loose. Just a quick reminder, ladies and gentlemen, that yes, we do need those contributions to keep the program up in the clouds. So please, click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know, you want to. Nas, I know the excitement is building as, unfortunately, Max's reign could be coming down much quicker than LCH's reign, who dominated Spain for decades, 5 wins in a row, I believe LCH had. What did you think about this whole wonderful weekend?
Well, you know, it's one of those things. In a season of not so plenty, Max still has 7 wins out of 10 races. Now, what is interesting is he's saying McLaren has a fast car. Zach Brown is all excited. Fans are excited. And when the checkered flag falls, who is the first to cross? Mr. Max Verstappen. And this is compared to 1 win each for Carlos Sainz Jr., Charles Leclerc, and Lando Norris. And last, but not the least, 1 singular sensation and 3rd place for LCH. Toto, it's called a podium. And how times have changed. So times are very exciting, and I have to agree with you. Looks like his party will end faster than Lewis's party did. But, you know, he's a smart guy. He will make the most of what he has from the package he has, and I'm loving it. How did you see the race, Senor?
Very exciting. The start was outstanding. And, of course, for me, the disappointment of Aston Martin continuing to go back to the times of, my goodness, I don't even want to mention it, but yes, Alpine out-qualifying Aston Martin really shakes my brain a little bit, but all we can do is thank Flavio for the motivation.
Yes, sir, and in case Max's teammate has been totally forgotten in Manhattan, let me just remind F1 Weekly familiar members, Max does have a full-time teammate, and he is looking for what Alonso and Lewis are looking for. First win of the season. Where are you? But Checo has 4 podium finishes compared to 7 race wins for his teammate. And I was thinking, since Dr. Marco is German-speaking, he will say, "Traurig, aber wahr," meaning sad but true. What say you, Mr. Rogers, in plain simple only on the Red Bull teammates' respective performance and lack of performance?
Well, yeah, that's what it is. And even Christian Horner wanted to give him the contract extension, hoping that this would put away any thoughts or issues that Perez might have, and maybe Le Performance would come back, but it has not. Obviously, this car has become more and more difficult to drive, and you have to be a super machismo to get the Performance, and apparently, Perez is not super machismo. Max is super machismo. Very simple equation.
You know, what we have here is the same situation in 1993, that Michael Andretti got into Formula One, and his real big problem was not taking the Concorde or living here or not enjoying or not finding a Big Mac in Toulouse and Paris, but his real problem was his teammate. As simple as that. And that's the situation Checo is in. Because, you know, if Alex Albon was number one or Pierre Gasly was number one at Red Bull, Checo would be winning quite a few races. So obviously it makes him look bad when his teammate keeps winning. But I think people who have followed motor racing for a long time, or at least understand what this package will do and what the Michael Jordans and the Tom Bradys of motor racing will do, then I think they will go easy on Mr. Checo Perez. But anyway, that's just my personal opinion. Quickie on Colly, sir, okay? By the way, Mr. Rogers, I was out of town, so I did not watch the whole race in live action, and I'm trying to catch up today. But anyway, Q3, one hombre was missing, and Barcelona is where he won his last Grand Prix, so we all know who that is. Now, on his final qualifying lap, Max got his mojo back and improved his time to 111.4 and looked like he was sailing away to Key Largo and another win. But then the papaya car of Lando Norris peeled off a faster lap to give him his second pole by 0.020. And one of my racing buddies overseas, he was very excited and sent me a text message, "Lando on pole." I was in between moving around, so I looked at the time and I responded to him. I said, "Look, 0.020, this is a done deal. Max is going to win." Because that's just way, that's just like Karun Chandu said, that's faster than blink of an eye. But your favorite driver and everybody's favorite driver, LCH, most successful driver also in Barcelona along with Schumi, he was third fastest, and this is where the problem was. He was 0.3 seconds slower than Lando, so this is, for me, the cutoff. And sharing row two with him was his teammate, George Russell. Now, only the second time, and I'm sure Hemi haters are loving this, this was only the second time George was outqualified by his teammate. Now, row three was all red, Leclerc ahead of Sainz Jr., but again, looking at the times, you knew the horse will not be pulling the cart here in Spain. Both Alpines made it to Q3, Gasly qualifying 7th and Ocon 9th. The second Red Bull of Checo was 8th and Oscar Piastri was 10th. So basically, 5 teams got both cars in top 10. Now this is where the real crux of the issue is. Gap between Lando and Max of 0.020 told me that as soon as DRS was enabled and Lando was less than a second ahead in the lead, it was soon going to be hasta la vista, baby. But, as you saw in the race, man, I gotta tell you something. I'm beginning to think that maybe I should have a favorite driver, and I'm gonna tell you who that would be. What a start to the Spanish Grand Prix. George Russell does a Max on Max, Lando, and his own teammate. I was very surprised to see DRS so early in the race. Now, I don't know the technical details, but normally it takes a few laps before the DRS is employed, right, or enabled?
Exactly.
So this came in pretty quickly, and I knew right there and then that George's dishes will be done soon. Max passing after a good solid defense by George, which was very impressive and very neat and clean by, kudos to both of them. Now, that was not a surprise. I mean, that's what Max does best. But the fact that Max was out of DRS range before that lap was over was maximally impressive. What say you, amigo?
That was a great start, and you're right. Max is, he is the new Le Professeur. He knows what to do, when to do it, how to do it. You're never going to tell Max what to do because he got to just, he knows what he's doing, just like Kimi Räikkönen. It was very impressive. And of course, George finding his inner Alonso, which I think he's going to have to pay a fee for that. Very exciting start. It was fun. And I watched it a couple of times just for shits and giggles.
Yeah, that car is quick and that driver is very quick, something we already know. Interestingly, season is not even halfway over and Max is already over 100 points ahead of his teammate. Now that is not good for Checo. Now here is my motorsports mantra, and I have a few today after the race in Montmelo. And of course, a lot is being said that there will be one more Spanish Grand Prix in Barcelona before it moves to Madrid. But that's another story for another podcast. The contenders have good intention, but I think they will remain pretenders. So go back, Jack, George, and Lando, and try to do it again this weekend in Austria, which just happens to be the home race for Red Bull in Austria. It is pretty clear regime change will only come with rule changes in 2026. With Newey leaving Red Bull after this season, we may see some effects in the performance of the team in 2026. But I think as long as Red Bull has Honda engines and the Max Factor, they will remain river deep and mountain high. Do you concur, Senor?
I do. Once they switch over to Ford, it could be a whole new era.
Yeah, the blue oval may put them in a blue funk like they did with Jaguar. And now time will tell. And you know, Lando Norris, we have followed this young man's career from the very beginning of his single-seater series, which was British Formula 4 in those days. It was called Formula MSA, and I remember going there with Mr. Brazier and doing an interview with very young, and you know, he was very short, Lando Norris. So great talent. He was second. Now, his tune after the race was, we should have won the race. And we have heard this before this season already. And I'm sure we will hear it again as the season sails toward Yas Marina. As I have said before on the show, I am convinced that this season, given the package Max has in his car and in his abilities, competition will need a car that is at least 0.3 second faster than Red Bull of Max to have any chance of beating this guy fair and square. What is impressive is how Norris is stamping his authority at McLaren against a very talented whippersnapper, which reminds me of Alonso feeling machismo and saying so against a highly rated young teammate he once had in his McLaren days, second stint, and that young teammate was Stoffel Vandoorne. Remember him, sir?
Yes, he's been electrified.
Yes, very great talent, very great talent. I hope we see McLaren win a few more races this season. You know, over the years, Zak Brown has taken a lot of flack for McLaren not winning, for him being an American, and, you know, whatever people want to throw at somebody when they don't like somebody. That has been done. So I'm very happy that McLaren, you know, very important name in the history of motor racing, and Zak has worked his way all the way from L.A., to Woking, and I hope, you know what, I'm hoping that Oscar Piastri also gets his first F1 victory this season. I am surprised that Lando has stamped his authority on the team this season. I was expecting some cage rattling from Piastri. How about you, Senor?
Well, I think we were all expecting more cage rattling, but apparently, maybe just like Perez, Piastri is struggling to get to the bottom of the McLaren, and maybe it suits Lando. It could be Hitko or Brembo.
Yes, he may want to send a text message to Rubinho to see where the brake pedal is. Okay, sir, now this was all rise. LCH was third. How wonderful to see him on the podium, first of the season. Even more impressive was his pass on local hombre, the other one, Mini Machismo. I call that pass pushy real good, put the needle on the record. And we have to do that because LCH and Schumi are the most successful drivers in Barcelona. I think they have 6 wins each. And I think what I heard on the telecast just before the recording, this was Lewis's 12th podium appearance in Spain. Do you remember some of the problems he had in the 2007 season and fans' behavior when he was teammate to Alonso?
I really don't recall any of those things.
Well, keep it that way. Yes. Okay, fourth, George Russell. I must say, and this is my new favorite driver now. I was very, very impressed by him. That pass to take the lead was simply absolutely marvelous. And not too many times you see a driver starting fourth, grab the lead after turn one, especially not when drivers ahead on the grid include Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen. So I have to give him 10 out of 10 kudos to George Russell on that pass. Did you like that, sir? How can you not like that?
It was great. I loved it. It was very Alonso-esque. And sure enough, it all came true.
I was thinking it was higher than that. I was thinking it's more like Senna-esque and Schumi-esque. But we all have our opinions. We're going to move on now. I was thinking, I did not watch this. I don't know if I saw this live or later. But anyway, I was thinking how George Russell had blown away Lando Norris in Formula 2 when everybody thought Lando was going to blow away George Russell. And then George blew away Bottas in Bahrain. And that pass he made on Bottas to take the lead, man, it's going to be embedded in my memory bank forever. And since the start of the 22 season, he is the only race winner for Silver Arrows. Now, granted, they have not won a lot of races, only one. But when your teammate has more race wins than Michael Schumacher, doing that is saying and achieving a lot. So I'm really excited. I cannot wait for this guy to be in a very competitive car where he can take the fight fair and square to Max and Lando. And of course, as always, may the best man win. But I'm thinking that George and Kimi Antonelli may give Toto many headaches next season, especially if James Ellison can provide them a very competitive car. Do you think Mercedes will have a competitive car next season, sir?
Very well, might have one by the end of the season. They're looking very, very strong. They're making progress. And Toto is in a better mood, so it's very possible. My only thing is, I really don't think Antonelli is ready. And when I look at his performance in F2, it really doesn't shake my wicket.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm kind of surprised. I mean, we'll see how it works out. The thing is, you know, most of these drivers who make it to Formula 1, they are very quick and very good. And it's very surprising how a large number of them don't make it, like Max or Lewis. But I think with Antonelli, he has been in the Mercedes family for quite a few years. If they support him very well and not, it's like Romain Grosjean, Nelson Piquet Jr., and other drivers who were with Renault, they would say that Flavia would tell them, you need to score points in this race or you're out. I mean, maybe that motivates some drivers, but, you know, I don't think it will motivate an 18, 19-year-old kid. But we have to see how it works out. But I'm very excited, and I think Antonelli is a very good talent, and let's give him the opportunity and see what he does in the racing community.
I will do that. But, you know, he drives for a very, very good team, Prima, and he only finished 12th in the Formula 2 race. I want to see him in the top 5 every weekend.
Well, you know, it's very good observation, but check this out. His teammate is Oliver Bearman, who last year as a rookie won several races, and he's also nowhere. So I don't know if they're having some issues with the car. You know, I'll tell you, Lando Norris, when he went to Formula 2 for the full season, he won the very first race. So I was convinced that this guy is going to rock and roll. And that George Russell made sure that was his only victory of that season. And he was with Trevor Carlin, and I've known Mr. Carlin for quite a few years. And I remember at the end of the season, I ran into Trevor at a race here in the U.S., and I asked him what happened. He says, you know, pointed to his head, he said, you know, mentally he was already in Formula 1 because he was under contract with McLaren, and his Pepito can also write a check which won't bounce. I don't know if that's a good excuse or maybe that's what happened, but sometimes these things do happen, and I don't know if that's affecting Oliver Bearman or... But there was, during the race, he got, I think his team called him and says, you already received 3 warnings, you know, track limits, and no more. And he right away responded, they played it on the telecast, hard not to do that when you can, you know, bleep, bleep, turn. So I don't know if they have some setup issues or what, but Prema has been a very successful team, so I'm kind of surprised. But you know how he did in the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. You remember that, right?
I do remember that, and you're right. Oliver Bearman, he finished 14th, and of course Jack Crawford was the 10th different winner in the 2024 season. So they're mixing it up in F2, and we'll just keep an eye on it.
Very true. Okay, 5th, Charles Leclerc. What can I say here? All I can think is the prancing horse is still feeling the pain and recovering from running up at Zandvoort lap after lap to give the rider a home victory. And, you know, it's just interesting how this team is operating. Now, his teammate Sainz Jr., 6th. Now, looks like, based on media reports, there is some verbal exchanges going on between teammates through the media. I just hope it does not get mean and ugly, but I do not expect much assistance when asked by the team, especially if he is being asked to let Leclerc pass. Because in the past, you know, I've heard he is not abusive or vulgar like Isaac Hadjar in F2 and, you know, Yuki Tsunoda, but he has flatly refused by saying no to team order. Do you think then things may go out of control between Charles Leclerc and Sainz as the season wears on?
No, luckily, because of proper upbringing and these guys having great father and fatherly figures, no. I think it'll get rough, but they'll keep it under control because they're friends and they know that's more important.
Okay, sir, moving on, the result order, 7th, Oscar Piastri, 8th, Checo Perez. Now, Gasly and Ocon picked up the last 2 points by point-paying position, and of course they drive for Alpine, and we know who's coming back in town. Real story is, of course, Flavio. So, which brings us to our next motorsports mantra of the week. Now, there's a lot of chatter, and a lot of people are expressing very strong opinions on this Flavio coming back. So, the story is, out in disgrace, back in to save face. Ed Straw, a well-respected journalist at therace.com, said about the return, and this is his comment. Briatore return erodes final bit of Renault's F1 credibility, end quote. And of course, he is not the only racing journalist questioning this decision. I've gone through a lot of YouTube and other websites. Some of them are just like very, very upset and using profanity about Flavio coming back. Because it was what happened in Singapore, and because of Briatore also involved, that their main sponsor, ING, pulled out, the big Dutch bank, and even the team got out of Formula One for a while. I guess Renault Group CEO, who is his paisan, Luca Di Meo, is treating Singapore like Vegas. What happens in Singapore stays in Singapore. But Briatore has been a mover and shaker in F1 for a long time. Not bad for someone who once worked at the Milan Stock Exchange and had never been to a race, till he was requested by the Benetton family, Luciano Benetton, while Flavio was working and expanding their business in the United States and based in Big Apple, New York City. In his halcyon days at Renault, he was managing several drivers who would drive for Renault, which was again an issue of with some people. This included Machismo, Romain Grosjean, Nelson Piquet Jr., who would bring the curtain and the wall down in the 2008 Singapore Grand Prix. Bringing back Briatore after letting go people like Prost, Permain, Safnauer proves the Alpine F1 program has gone down the black hole of Clermont-Ferrand, if not Calcutta. And it reminds me of a line from a song from the Eagles, Desperado, "Why don't you come back to your senses?" One of your favorites, right?
Exactly.
Now, the tune from the other side in the team principal press conference is sung by Bruno Fermat. According to him, and of course he's right, Flavio has 40 years experience in Formula One, knows a lot of people, and this can only help Alpine. Now, Flavio was also instrumental in bringing the Grand Prix to Azerbaijan And along with Bernie, he set up the GP2 championship. So the man has done a lot, but you know, the way I look at it, he was given a sentence, life ban, which was overturned by a French court, and so was Pat Simmons given a sentence. Now, both these gentlemen have served their time, paid their debt to the society, or however you want to put it, but with the nature of the crime was such, for them to come back into the Sabre arena, Formula One, that is just, I guess it can only happen in Formula One. Something like this cannot happen in NFL or World Cup football. Would you like to throw some light on this dark alleyway Luca Di Meo is traveling now?
Listen, folks, first of all, he said he was sorry. He apologized. He has paid his debt to society, including fines. And we need to be a little more forgiving.
Oh, yes, that's what Bill Clinton said about America. America is a very forgiving country, and he should know. But, you know, talking about he has said sorry, I was reading in one of the websites, and that's one of the points they were making. He was asked at, I think, at the Spanish Grand Prix by some journalist what he thinks about people who don't agree with him coming back. And he didn't say anything like being what happened was wrong. He says they can F.O. So, you know, the guy is a billionaire, you know, he's not going to care about when a big corporation, a global corporation wants you, F1 has not revoked your passes. It's just think about it this way, they have revoked Nelson Piquet's privileges for a comment he made, which several Brazilian people whose mother tongue is Portuguese, language I don't speak nor understand, have told me the word he used is regularly used, and they say, yeah, it can be taken in a negative way, but that was not his intention, and that's what they're saying. And here is a guy who was involved in this crash. He's being allowed back. So it's just only in Formula One. Do you concur, sir?
I suppose so, but let's put it this way. He shows up, and they're in the points. Back-to-back races, they didn't hit each other. I think it's good news for everybody. Flavio, deep down, is an honorable man.
Well, you might want to do a little deep Google dive into him, and there's a lot more to his story, by the way. Do you know, at one time, a disgruntled driver whom he had managed, and he was playing with the wrong guy. This guy was from, and this is a true story, this guy was from Sicily, and he had sent a parcel bomb to Flavio's apartment in England. So, we'll see. But, you know, but one thing, a comment was made, I think, by Flavio that he can turn this team around in 2 years. And I have to, one thing I will for sure agree, that, remember Frank Montani, who was a test driver, he was at one time under Briatore's management, and he made a comment to me, Flavio makes things happen. And yeah, he can make things happen, he can bring things down, so we will see. So, we have to move on to some other teams. Sauber, they have steak in the name, but this steak has no sizzle. It is the only team which has not yet scored a single point. Which brings me to the issue going back to Carlos Sainz. Where will he go? He really has two options now. Sauber or Williams. Now, there was a latest news, a twist is that Alpine is now trying to get him back because he used to be at Renault. So, it will be up very soon where Mr. Sainz will be racing next year. And anything else before we give out the championship numbers and then take up the sunny break?
Yeah, why don't you go through the numbers and I'll start boiling water back here.
Well, in the Drivers' Championship, Max leading 219, Lando second 150, Leclerc third 148, Sainz Jr. next, 116, and completing top five, Checo, 111, which used to be a fighter plane once upon a time, F-111. Beautiful plane. Okay, teams. Red Bull leading the way, 330 points. Ferrari with a pulse, 270 points. McLaren, 237. Wow, how the mighty have fallen. Red Bull has 330 and Mercedes, 151. And Aston Martin, 58. And I have to look up how many of these are scored by Alonso and how many by Daddy's little Jim Clark. So with that, shall we take a break, sir?
I think we should, Nasser, because I'm very thirsty after all that Flavio talk. So we'll be back after these brief messages. Our bonus today is another episode from Loosh on the Loose.
Hello, F1 Weekly. This is Lucien Byfield in South Australia with Loosh on the Loose. Let's take another look at Spygate 2007. Hi, Clark and NASA. I want to bring to light something that reputable writer and journalist Tony Dodgins has written in his book, Rivals. Now, regarding 2007, I am pretty sure any moderate fan of Formula One knows at least some of the details in that whole Ferrari and McLaren scandal, so I will not reiterate what is easily available to look up. But in reading the chapter about Hamilton and Alonso, Dodgins infers, suggests, pretty much states that there was a lot more going on than we realise. Now, Formula One has always been a questionable sport regarding honesty, integrity, cheating, breaking, or bending the rules, and throughout history, whether on track or in the boardrooms of the governing bodies, there have been inconsistencies in how punishments have been handed out, sometimes retracted, and even overlooked when blatant cheating has occurred. From the drivers on track to teams and management breaking the rules, bending the rules, or, if you will, interpreting the rules in such a way that they can break them legitimately, on and on it goes. Now, one driver will be heavily punished for a dangerous manoeuvre when many in the paddock see the incident as a racing incident, yet others get away time and time again with very questionable driving. No, let us call it dirty driving. There was a time when pretty much anyone in the paddock would tell you that cheating was rife, or to be more politically correct, being influenced by others' work. That was the norm. Anyway, as long as I have followed the sport for nearly four decades, it has been common practice for teams to send staff down the pit lane to photograph other teams' cars and to use all kinds of electronic devices to analyse engine revs, temperatures, you name it. Anyway, Spygate was such a phenomenal story and resulted in an unprecedented punishment, but what most do not seem to realise is what went on behind closed doors, as suggested by Tony Dodgins. Kimi Raikkonen is heralded as the last Ferrari world champion, and the way that team kept squandering talent and money, well, he might be the last, or at least the last for a very long time. But if what is revealed in the book Rivals is remotely true, then Kimi may be as much an illegitimate world champion as Fernando, a race winner in Singapore 2008. And I will not dare to mention many more examples. Oh, I'm itching. And now I want to go on about Ross Brawn in 2003 and other seasons. Blown diffusers, tyre wars to ensure victory. Oh, I'm still mad about 2003 and that whole Michelin tyre gate. So, with an apparent $5 million fine for McLaren, having obtained Ferrari documents, and a further $95 million added to it just because it seems that Max Mosley had a personal vendetta against Ron Dennis, it is alleged in the book that McLaren, in no uncertain terms, were warned that in being so heavily punished and losing all constructors' points and any chance of a constructors' title, that it would look pretty stupid if they won the driver's title in essentially a car derived from Ferrari intellectual property. Alleged. To further the suggestion, it is pretty much known, according to Dodgins, that somebody high up told McLaren that they were not to win in 2007. And with both Fernando and Lewis pretty much a shoe-in for the title fight, with one of them likely to be the world champ that year, possibly Lewis, given his great rookie season, McLaren suddenly faltered in the last two races, and in ways that were not typical of the season. Prior to those last two races, Ron Dennis continued to prove his weak leadership by letting the team squabble with infighting, patriotism amongst the mechanics and staff, and with both drivers taking points off of each other. Oh, just think back to 1986. Now, Lewis pretty much had the title sewn up in China, not needing to win, but for some crazy reason, in mixed conditions, he was not brought in for a tyre change, when it was completely obvious even to the blind that he needed to. His lap times fell by seconds, back markers overtook him, and the canvas was clearly seen on the rear tyres. Explain that to me, somebody, please. Now, we all thought it was nuts back then. The commentators did too. So why on earth did a professional world championship winning team do that to him? Was Nando up to more blackmail? Was Lewis being stupid and stubborn? Or was the team obeying a warning not to win the title? At a quick glance, or thought, that sounds so stupid. But remember, sport is far more than sport. It is politics with vast sums of money and far more than drivers' reputations at stake. So, off to Brazil, the final race, and Lewis doesn't have to win. Doesn't have to do too much, really, other than to just stay in the top few positions. And then he would have been world champion, regardless of Fernando and Kimi way out front. An independent steward was hired to ensure parity at McLaren, and yet it was obvious they were backing Hamilton. And yet, out of nowhere, Hamilton's car develops a glitch that suddenly rectifies itself once he's sent right down the field. Now, he eventually came up through the field and finished just outside of the positions he needed to be world champion. But then, there were cars ahead of him that fuel irregularities were found in, and they were not disqualified. Now, something was up. I am not a supporter of Hamilton. I don't like the Lewis is a perennial victim tag that he seems to have. He's done his fair share of dirty driving, let's call it, and other things. He's not a liar, remember that? Oh, dear me. But anyway, McLaren owned 2007. They had it won easily. They could have had both titles sewn up early. So what on earth happened? Now, Kimi Raikkonen had driven pretty poorly at times during the year. I rate Kimi. I love the Kimi of this era. But at the end of the day, he did fall asleep a fair bit. And yet McLaren gifted him some easy wins and, pretty much candy from a baby, gave him the title. Now, Dodgins is no hack. He has decades of experience in this game, and he has not put this stuff in a book for nothing. So, Kimi Raikkonen may be one of the most undeserving champs in history, and the way people go on about manipulation these days, he might be what some would call a fake champion. The thing that is sad for us, the average fan and viewer of the sport, is that we will never really know what is going on. Think back to Brabham in 83 with illegal fuel. It was well known, it is well known, and they still won the title. Bernie Eccleston was running that team. And you look at the following year, Tyrrell were thrown out of the whole season, stripped of all of their results, because they were doing some kind of water and ball bearing weight saving trick. Ugh. Anyway, think of Singapore 08. Massa is rightly incensed, not because he lost the race, but because the race's results should have been annulled, which would have made him world champion. Oh, over the years, we've seen drivers win with illegal tyre pressures. We've seen cars with flexi wings. We've seen all kinds of things. Sometimes they get away with it. Sometimes they don't. When I read this chapter in Rivals, I felt really sad and cheated. For at the end of the day, what we see often is what we're allowed to see. Whether it be team orders, team and driver favouritism from the powers that be, it's just never a level playing field. And possibly most of what we have seen over the years has been orchestrated behind closed doors. There have been times that certain drivers have not been allowed to get away with anything, but once they are in a position of global power, from the celebrity that brings in a large paying demographic, paying fans, suddenly those drivers are allowed to do whatever they want. From Senna to Schumacher, Hamilton to Verstappen, it just goes on and on. And time again, clever people like Ross Brawn have been lawyer-like in the way they can tell you that the sky is actually green, even though we can all see it's blue. Yes, I know it's not really blue. Anyway, 2007, a sham in more ways than one, and yet still in my top three of all seasons. Okay, Formula One Weekly, that is it from me, Lucien Byfield in South Australia with Loosh on the Loose.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, with the Sultan, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And before we get into nitty-gritty details of action from different cities around the world, let's listen to Mr. Michael Schmidt. Now, he is a German journalist whom I've known since the early 90s, and we run into each other at races, and he has always given me good information and answered questions. He is the one who broke the story of Adrian Newey leaving Red Bull. And he talks how he found this out. So it's a very interesting conversation. And he works for this German publication called Automotor und Sport out of Stuttgart. So my thanks to him, and I hope listeners enjoy this conversation. Okay, folks, I'm here with a gentleman, and you are a gentleman, right?
Yes.
Good. Whom I've known since the early 1990s, Michael Schmidt. Michael, good to meet you again. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you very much. I'm doing now, 710 or something like Grand Prix. I have already under my belt, but in 2 years' time I will retire.
Okay. Now, 700 Grand Prix, how did the passion start for motor racing for you?
Well, I was 11 years old when I watched the Grand Prix on television. It was the British Grand Prix in 1970. And it was a crazy race because there was a fight between Jochen Rindt and Jack Brabham for the lead. And Jochen Rindt, he was sitting in a Lotus 72, which visibly looked as the best car. It was the first car with a wedge shape, and all the others, there were this the traditional shape. So you could see this is the best car, and Jochen Rindt was the big hero of this season. And Jack Brabham was still sitting in one of these old-fashioned cars, but Jack did a fantastic race. So I think after halftime of the race, he overtook Jochen Rindt, and then he disappeared, had an advantage of 12, 13 seconds. And then in the last lap, two corners before the end, he ran out of fuel, and Rindt won the Grand Prix still. Brabham finished second because he still had enough momentum to pass the line. But that was something which caught my attention. This was something so incredible. It was so much bad luck. And from that day onwards, I was a motor racing fan.
Well, that's a very famous victory, famous race question I have for you. Did you ever get a chance to talk to Mr. Ron Dennis and ask him if he was responsible for Brabham running out of fuel?
No, I had a lot of talks with Ron Dennis, but I never asked him this one. But I read in a newspaper 3 or 4 years ago a story of he was member of the Brabham team, and he explained what really happened. It has nothing to do with Ron Dennis, because there was a miscalculation. That the problem was that I think in the formation lap to the grid they ran a little bit the fuel mixture a little bit richer to find some things out how the tires would behave, and then normally on the grid you would change the mixture back to a little bit leaner, less fuel consumption. And Jack Brabham had the feeling that the track had more grip than in practice, so he thought maybe we are running faster, so we should add a little bit of fuel. That's what they did. The problem is they forgot to change the mixture back to lean, so they kept the mixture which he had in the formation lap, and that killed him.
Okay. Now, what was your first Grand Prix that you attended, and how old were you?
The very first Grand Prix I attended was 1976 in Monza with my parents, but we didn't see the Grand Prix. We only were there on Friday, and that was the event when Niki Lauda came back after his Nürburgring accident. And I remember it was Friday, was washed out with rain, and we were sitting on the main grandstand because that was the only grandstand which was covered. And opposite there was a pit lane, and in the first practice I think almost nobody drove because there was too much rain. Only in the end, Rolf Stommelen did a few laps. That was the first time I saw a Formula One car live. And then in the second practice in the afternoon, everybody obviously went out because they had to try how the car behaves in the rain. The pit lane was more or less empty, only around the Ferrari pits, a garage. There was a huge amount of journalists, photographers, whatever. And everybody obviously waiting for Niki coming out. And the first one who was coming out was Reutemann. He was the third driver in this event. Then was Regazzoni, and always people were cheering, obviously. And when James Hunt went out, people were booing because he was the enemy. Yeah. And then finally Niki came, and this was very strange. Nobody was cheering. Everybody was standing up, just doing like this, they had so much respect for this coming back after such an accident, after 42 days or whatever it was. Yeah, that was a real big moment. The first real Grand Prix where it was the whole weekend there was Hockenheim 1977.
Mario Andretti won that race, I believe?
No, it was Niki. This was funny because, it was exactly a year after his accident on the Nürburgring. But 77, the Grand Prix was in Hockenheim.
Yeah, and he won the championship.
Yes, he won the championship,
Okay, very good, very good. Yeah, I remember the 76 Italian Grand Prix very, very well. And I was a huge Niki and Ferrari fan, so tremendous guy. Okay, now, this is very important. Great job in breaking the Adrian Newey leaving Red Bull story. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I'm not going to ask you about your source, but I want to know, how sure were you that this would happen?
I was pretty sure because I talked to Adrian already in Japan, and he told me already at that time it was still confidential that it's very likely that he would leave because he was fed up with all the politics. But obviously, because he said to me it's confidential, I didn't report about it. And then I got on that day a call from somebody, it's going to happen now. And he said probably there will be even a press release in the evening. I think Red Bull stopped it when they saw that the story is out, and they waited for 1 week, and then it came out this year, just before we came here.
Yeah, well, I'm very impressive that Adrian knew he had so much trust in you. Is there more to this story that what has come out, that he was just tired of the politics? The reason I'm asking is he's not serving any gardening leave. So do you think there's more to it?
No, the problem is, in a way you have to understand a little bit Christian Horner. The big problem is, nowadays with the budget cap, you can only give your people, your employees, a certain amount of salary. The top three earners are out of the budget cap. So this is obviously Christian Horner, this is Adrian Newey, and the third one I don't know. But from 2026 onwards, it doesn't, in the moment, Adrian is, I think, only 20% Formula 1 and 80% this super sports car, you know, RB17.
Hypercar.
So, in the moment, that doesn't matter. But in 2026, everybody who's working there, whether it's 10% or 100%, the whole salary counts to the budget cap. The FIA doesn't care how many, whether you do some other jobs, so it's because it's easier to calculate. So the problem was now, because everybody tries to get Red Bull engineers, others, you are not new, other engineers, because obviously they build the best car, Horner has to protect them. So what he had to do was the leading engineers giving more salary and to pull one of them into the top three earners. But this seat was more or less blocked by Newey. And Horner's idea was, I give to Adrian all these side projects, so he's completely out of Formula One, and I have a seat open for one of my other engineers to go into the top three earners, which don't count for the budget cap. So, but Adrian didn't like that. Adrian wanted to be in Formula One. And he told me at the test in Bahrain, when I asked him that question, he said, it's me who decides how much I work for Formula One or not. Already at that moment, he was a little bit in doubts.
Well, that's an interesting statement, I decide. Very good. Okay, now, what about his destination? Do you have a scoop on that?
Not yet. No, I think it's still open. I would say the most likely candidate is Ferrari because they can afford him. Not only the salary. The problem is with a guy like Adrian, because he has so many ideas. Also, the ideas cost money because you have to translate them into a car. So very often in his career, he went to an engine manufacturer and said, listen, just give an example. I don't want to have the pumps on the side of the engine because I need a narrow engine. And when the people said it's not possible, he said, you make it possible. And you know he has the authority because it's Adrian Newey, that people then do it because he needs the space for the aerodynamics. But things like that cost a hell of a lot of money because, you know, it's just not only to bring the pumps somewhere else in the engine, this is only an example, but also the following consequences of something like this. So I doubt that a team like Williams can afford this.
So is this how Adrian Newey turned a GP2 engine into a F1 championship winning engine?
You mean, which engine you mean now? No,
the Honda. Alonso called F1 GP2 engine.
Yeah. Adrian for sure gave Honda a few, let's say, in terms ideas. Of geometry, ideas, yeah. What he needs for the aerodynamics, and then they do it, the people. It was always like that. For example, in 2000, when was it, when CAS came in 2009, I think, 9 years. Then it was 1 year off and then came back. He had the batteries of the cars. Mm-hmm. He was the only one in the gearbox casing.
Oh, wow.
To save space.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody else would have probably told him, listen, there's no space for a fucking battery. But he said, no, I want to have it there. Yeah. And when people said, oh, it's not possible, he said, I'll show you how it's possible. Then he does a rough drawing on his drawing board and then he shows to the people. And this is the difference he makes because, you know, he's so strong in his opinions and he has such a big view on everything of the car, not only aerodynamics. People think he's an aerodynamicist. He knows as much about suspensions, about tire management, stuff like that, because he was a long time race engineer. He was Mario Andretti's race engineer at Newman Haas in IndyCar. And then later, even when he was chief designer at Williams, he worked parallel as a race engineer. So he has also, you know, the practical knowledge.
Yeah, very, very fascinating insights.
Okay, Adrian leaving at the beginning of 2025 and Honda saying sayonara at the end of the year, do you think Max will stay at Red Bull in 2026 regardless of what his contract states?
No, I don't think so. I think in 2026, for him, ideally, he would like to leave at end of 25 because I think he has some doubts whether RB Powertrains can do the same job as a big manufacturer.
How much involvement will Ford have in this system?
Well, they will give their expertise in terms of batteries, in terms of electro power, but Ford hasn't been in top motorsports since quite a while, and obviously also they have to learn, and I think that is probably also part of the doubts. You know, RB Powertrains is a private manufacturer. You cannot compare it with Mercedes, Honda, Audi, or whoever, Ferrari.
Yeah.
Here's my favorite question of the season. Will Lewis win his 8th championship in a red car before Alonso wins his 3rd in a green car?
Well, I would say yes, because, you know, Ferrari is closer to the top than Aston Martin. Aston Martin, you can see, they had a good season last year. Now they're struggling a little bit with tire management. I think that will keep them busy for sure half a season until they have solved this problem. And Ferrari is on its way up now. You can see the car is very close to the Red Bull already, although they didn't have any upgrade so far. They will have the big upgrade in Imola, so that could make the difference.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Hockenheim Ring under new ownership, 2 German F1 teams in Grand Prix racing soon, just like the old days, Mercedes and Auto Union. What are the chances of Grosser Preis von Deutschland back on the calendar?
Well, I doubt it will be for 26. First of all, Hockenheim, you know, they have a lot of debts. They have to sort out this. Mm-hmm. And then the owner said already it has to be a reasonable thing. I mean, they wouldn't do it if they know they're losing money. And the kind of money Formula One is asking now, with the kind of interest we have in Formula One in Germany, Formula One in Germany is at the moment not a premium sport. Okay, we have only Hülkenberg and Mercedes is too... They don't attract too many people. I can imagine that if Audi comes, if Mercedes is there, if Hülkenberg is doing successful, then maybe step by step the interest is coming back. But that takes for sure 1 or 2 years. So I would say maybe in 27 or 28 we can see a German Grand Prix. Because first we need the season 2026 to get the people back being interested in Formula One.
You mentioned the figure. What is the estimated figure to get a Grand Prix at a track? 30 million, 40 million?
Well, nowadays you have, as a European Grand Prix, you have to pay for sure 25, between 25 and 30. Yeah. And for that, Hockenheim needs to be break even. I think they need about 70,000-75,000 spectators, and they have doubts to get them at the moment.
Well, the place is impressive, especially the big stadium.
If it sold out with 90,000, they would make a small profit. Then they would do it. But the big problem is at the moment they wouldn't trust that they get, you know, even 60,000.
Okay. Audi F1 team has one vacancy. Who will be Nico's teammate in 2026 in your expert and investigative opinion?
I would say in the end, I think it will be Carlos Sainz.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Now, has he confided in you?
Sorry?
Has he given you some confidential info?
No. I mean, we all know for sure first option for Carlos Sainz is Red Bull, but he has to wait what Max Verstappen is doing. That can take a while. He has an offer from Mercedes.
Oh, really?
Offer. They said to him, if you want to sign, it will be a 1+1 year contract. He knows exactly. 1+1 means if Verstappen comes, he's out after 1 year.
Yeah.
So in the end, for me, the most attractive thing is to be 3 years with Audi. Next year, Sauber. Okay, you have to be aware that next year you're not fighting for podiums and for wins because Sauber has to build up. And maybe even 26 it will be difficult unless Audi does a super engine, because Adrian Newey is a little bit afraid that the next generation of cars will be rather an engine formula again than a car formula. Like in 2014, you remember when Mercedes had the best hybrid engine right from the beginning, and it was more an engine-dominated generation than an aero car dominated.
Now, tell me if you disagree with or agree with my thinking. Given the history of motor racing, going back 100 years, Auto Union, Mercedes, you know, Hermann Lang, Caracciola, Porsche, Audi at Le Mans, Audi at Relling, Quattro, and all that. It has been very common that German companies, once they come into racing, in due course of time, they do complete blitzkrieg on the competition. I think that's what's going to happen with Audi. It will take time. What say you?
No, I think Audi will be, on the engine side, competitive from day one onwards. They are good people. They have taken over engineers from all manufacturers, from Ferrari, from Mercedes, from RB Powertrains, although this is only existing since 1.5 years. They've taken people from them, so they have enough experienced people. I was there in the factory 1.5 weeks ago. All dynos are running already. The first full engine was running on the dyno last October, so they are in time, on time. All of a sudden, they are very, very confident. I think they believe they have something in the engine which nobody else will have. So I think the engine, don't worry.
Yeah. Personally, I don't know Andreas Seidel, but I met him once. He looks like a very cool, calm, collected guy. You think he's the good leader for the team?
Yeah, he's a good leader. I mean, he showed that Porsche, you know, in Le Mans, that quite quickly Porsche was very successful. So, okay, it's not that easy in Formula One, but I think he's doing a good job. I have a little bit doubts in whether James Key is the right technical director, but he has a very high thoughts about James Key. So yeah. I said to him, you should take Adrian Newey, but...
So basically, they're not coming in as to be the new Hesketh of motor racing.
Yeah.
Have a good time. They're not coming...
No. They want to have... Audi always wants to have success. This is a success-minded company, more than probably anybody else.
Yeah, very true. Okay, now, your homeboy, Sebastian Vettel, is still the youngest world champion and won 4 championships in a row. How come he was never as popular in Germany as Schumi?
Well, I don't know whether it's in other countries, but in Germany we have this. The first one who brings a sport, you know, into the spotlight is always overshadowing everybody who follows. We had the same in tennis with Boris Becker. Mm-hmm. The next one was Michael Stich, who was, I think, also twice Wimbledon winner, but he never ever got the same glory like Boris Becker. This is the same with Michael Schumacher. He, you know, brought Formula One on to... He brought Germany onto Formula One's landscape.
You know, it's. I hate to ask you this, but you know, it's part of life. What do you know about Michael Schumacher's situation now, his condition?
I think it's still very sad. I think he's. I wouldn't say he's not aware, but I think he, for sure, he cannot do anything by himself. He needs people around him. Whether he's aware of things happening or not is very difficult to say. Some people said he has a, how is this called, taking a name to it, you know, that the brain is working, but the body,
you know. Mentally, he's there.
He's there, yeah, but he cannot express himself. Yeah.
Physically, he cannot.
There's a medical expression for this, plug-in syndrome or something like that. Yeah.
Okay, very sad.
Yeah.
Okay, Mick Schumacher, do you think we will see him back in Formula One, or has Formula One done a walk-on-by on him?
I think it will be very difficult. The only chance I see for him next year is maybe Alpine, because he's there in the Le Mans team. And Alpine, in the moment, is doing not very well. Ocon and Gasly, they look already for places somewhere else. So maybe there's a place opening next year for him.
Yeah. You know, if French drivers are leaving a French dream, you know you got a deep blue problem.
Yeah.
What do you think is their problem apart from the revolving door? Is it the engine, the chassis, or everything?
No, the engine is not the best, but I think this is maybe worth 2/10 or something like that. They just built a bad car, to be honest. It went the wrong way completely. It was overweight in the first 5 races. Now it's on the weight limit. That was the first problem. Now you see it has become a little bit better now, but still they are struggling to get points. So I think they got it completely wrong with the aerodynamics.
And the Mercedes W13 looks like the ghost has followed into other cars also. What is their problem, you think? You think the engine is strong at least?
The engine is still good, but also there, I think the big problem of Mercedes is they don't understand their car. It has moments of brilliance, like yesterday in Q2, Hamilton was second, but then all of a sudden he's seventh, only 10 minutes later. And they don't understand what happens. They have a big problem to understand how to treat the tires, how to prepare them. And they also have a big problem, I think, about some aerodynamic phenomena. So since we have these ground effect cars.
Okay. 3 Formula One races in the U.S., will the international motorsports media go mental if Liberty Media adds a 4th one in New York or Chicago?
No, I think a 4th one would be the limit. If it's more, then yes. But you have to say America is a big continent, you know, compared to Europe, it's as big as Europe. So in Europe, we have how many? 8 races or 9? Yeah.
Is there a place or a track where you would like to see another U.S. Grand Prix?
No, I think three is enough, but I wouldn't mind if there's a fourth one. You know, if it's a good destination. For me, my personal favorite here is Austin because it's a Grand Prix for the fans. There's less party. It's more for true motor racing fans.
Have you tried medium rare steak there?
Yes, it's very good.
And the onion rings?
Oh, and the onion rings, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, sir. In all the time you have been covering Formula One, if you were a team owner and all the drivers who have raced in that time frame, they were in their prime, who would you pick as your two drivers?
I would say Senna and Alonso.
Senna and Alonso, coming from a German guy. No Michael Schumacher?
No, I think Alonso is was the evolution of Michael Schumacher. He was in everything even a bit better. The problem is, the only thing where he's not good is always in the wrong place. he, you know, when he left the teams, he left them in a bad mood sometimes. There is not very clever, but in the car, he's fantastic. Yeah. Yeah.
What was so special for you for Senna?
Well, I mean, he had this magical talent, and also he had a charisma, obviously, and he was very demanding on the team, but people listened to him because he was so good. So they knew, you know, if something goes wrong, it's not his fault, it's the fault of whatever, the car or the engine or whatever. So I think he was a very demanding person and an outstanding talent.
And finally, you know, we do a podcast also. Would you have a message for listeners? Can you tell us about your website, the magazine you work for and all that?
Ah, my website?
Yeah.
Okay. Now we have at Automotor and Sport, obviously now modern days, we are not only print media anymore, so we have a website where we write articles, but we also have a video platform where we do probably once a week a video, mostly after the Grand Prix to explain what has happened, but sometimes if something outstanding happens, whether it's history, like now, you know, 30 years after Senna's, after the Imola events, or now Adrian Newey leaving, or Hamilton going to Ferrari, then we do a special podcast, a video podcast. Yeah, that's what we are doing.
No problem.
Very nice.
Michael, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Back to you, Nats.
Thank you, sir. F2 sprint race, also, of course, in Barcelona. First win of the season for Alpine Junior and your fellow Francais, Monsieur Victor Martins. You know, I thought his name is Victor Martin. And I was talking to Tom Dillman a few months ago here at one of the races, I think Daytona. So I asked him, is the name Martin or Martins? He said it's Martins. So maybe different parts of France say it different. How would you say this last name?
I would say Martin, but I'm from the north. If you're from the deep south, you could go from Martino to Martin.
Yeah, okay. This name is easy. Feature race was won by, like you already said, by Mr. Jack Crawford. And his name, the nickname is Jetpack. So this is, he's still very young. He used to be in the Red Bull program. And, you know, I could not believe at a very young age they threw him in Formula 3 and then quickly put him into Formula 2, which obviously, you know, he struggled. But he is doing a very good job now, won the race. I watched the race, won it fair and square, so that's good. Okay, now here's another motorsports mantra on one of the drivers in Formula 2, Monsieur Isaac Hadjar, French guy of Algerian descent. He is quick like Yuki, and just like Yuki, he has a short fuse. Good thing is, he is much less abusive. He yells and screams a lot, but the good thing is I'm not using much profanity. I think Mr. Hadjar should think twice before exploding on his team. He is in his second year of Formula 2. He has to deliver the championship this year to his pay and career master, the one and only Dr. Marco. Red Bull does not allow three seasons in Formula 2. More importantly, Dr. Marco has a very sharp machete from the Vienna Woods, and he can swing chop-chop anytime. Word to the wise, Isaac, you got the name and the speed. Don't get the shaft. Which brings us to the Formula 3 sprint race. Trident teammates Santiago Ramos and Sami Megatunif. They do a Rosberg and Hamilton deja vu. local hombre, Mari Boya, says gracias muchachas and goes on to take his first Formula 3 victory. So good for him. Formula 3 feature race, Arvid Lindblad from England becomes first driver to win two races this season in this series. He took the lead from pole sitter Christian Mansell, who was from Australia, early in the race and never looked back. He also won the first race of the season, which was a sprint event in Bahrain. Mansell was second. Italian Luca Fornaroli snatched final step off the podium by passing Luke Browning on the final lap. And Mr. Fornaroli leads the championship now. Now we come to Formula Regional Europe by Alpine. Quite a name. And the it's known as Freca. This is the new style of what used to be the Formula Renault Euro Cup. They were in action at the Hungaroring. Both races were won by Finnish Ferrari driver Academy member Tuukka Toppinen. I met him briefly at Monza last year, and if all goes well, I plan to interview him when they race at Mugello next month. Third in the second race was McLaren Jr. we interviewed last year, Mr. Ugo Ogochukwu. Now, based on performance, I think he is losing the plot. He came through the karting system same time as Kimi Antonelli and had a stellar karting career. Single-seater scene has been a tough nut to crack so far for Ugo. He is 11th in the championship with 26 points. Brazilian Red Bull Jr. Rafael Camara leads the championship with 159 points over Toppinen, who is on 113 points. Indy cars were in your backyard, sir. Laguna Seca, I understand Alex Palou was the winner. I have not watched any of this race. Did you get a chance to watch it on TV?
IndyCar and watching it on TV is very interesting, especially since NBC is now covering the beginning of the Olympics, the pre-Olympic time trials and everything. So Lee Diffie was moved over to the Olympic team, and apparently NBC forgot to send a team to cover the race at Laguna Seca. So instead of Laguna Seca, when you went to the USA channel, they threw in NASCAR. It's very interesting, but I did hear Lee Diffie covering the time trials for the people trying out for the Olympics, and I realized Lee Diffie's over there, and they forgot to send somebody over here. So I was able to stream it, and they streamed it at the local level. So it was like going to, you know, the historics in 1977.
Interesting.
It was very interesting, but it was the usual, lots of crashing, lots of caution, lots of dirt, and Palou seems to do well in that kind of environment, and he won. And then Joseph Newgarden, he probably needed to take a shower because he was in the dirt so much that it was very interesting, but the TV coverage was nil. Even if you went to Peacock, it said NTT IndyCar Racing at Laguna Seca, but when you clicked that, they didn't have the nerve to show the local coverage. So it went directly to NASCAR, which was in your favorite part of the world up in New England and New Hampshire.
Great. Okay, sir, Indy next, the Formula 2 of IndyCar Racing. They were also at Laguna Seca. There were two races over the weekend. Louis Foster from England was the winner in race 1 on Saturday. He is one of the top two talents in Indy next. I fully expect to see him move into IndyCars next season. The other is Nolan Siegel.
Hi, I'm Nolan Siegel, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
He was recently signed for Arrow McLaren team and raced, I believe he raced in the IndyCar event at Laguna Seca on Saturday. Now, Sunday race 2, more of the same. Foster freezes the competition with a repeat performance. He now leads the championship. He has won 4 of the last 5 races. Interestingly, the only one that got away was taken by Jamie Chadwick, very fair and square, at Road America. And I watched that race, and tremendous, tremendous performance by Jamie, not only in the race, but also in qualifying. So kudos to her. Okay, sir. Well, you probably heard that Gene Haas and Tony Stewart are closing their the NASCAR team. But Gene Haas has now said he will have a new operation. So good for him. But they have lost their arbitration case against Uralkali, which was the company owned by Dmitry Mazepin's Pepito. And they were requesting the return of $13 million sponsorship paid in advance, and then he was told he cannot race. So let's see what happens there. Okay, so we're just going to go back to Formula One and look at some factoid. A few famous wins, first famous wins in Spain. One I remember very, very well was the 1974 Spanish Grand Prix, I believe it was Jarama, and it was very joyfully reported on BBC by Simon Taylor. And also recently I was watching a review, and they said the Ferrari mechanics did a great job, and all four tires were changed within 45 seconds. How things have changed, huh? Then in 1996, Schumacher, Michael Schumacher, of course, he took his first win in a red car in the rain, and that performance is absolutely above the clouds, if I may use that term. Then, of course, in 2012, the last hurrah for Williams, an incredible and unforgettable victory for Hombre from Venezuela, Pastor Maldonado, beating local Machismo in second place. Now, that picture of Alonso and Kimi picking up Pastor on the podium is one of the sweetest for me in all of motor racing. Very good sportsmanship by second and third place finisher. And then there was the 2016, the Max Factor. Donkey to Silver Arrows, Max becomes the youngest Grand Prix winner as a teenager. And one racer, which was not the first win, I think it was actually the last win in the life and times of Gilles Villeneuve, and I remember listening to this 1981 Spanish Grand Prix, also at Jarama on French radio, and this is when he had this lumbering Ferrari, which was really not a good car, and he had like four or five drivers within second and a half behind him, lap after lap after lap, and he was able to hold them back and win the race. So that just wanted to bring that up as a tremendous performance in one of the Spanish Grand Prix. And we have many more. We can talk about it some other time. Anything else, Mr. Rogers, you would like to say, talk, ask, complain?
Are you enjoying Danica Patrick? Apparently she's taken over for Naomi Schiff, which surprised me in Spain. I understand. On that note, Nass, I'm going to just leave it alone. I want to thank everybody who listens. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.